On one end of the scale is somebody who is open-ended, adaptable, flexible. You give them a system, maybe they'll go through the system one time, but if they do it the second time, they are finding shortcuts, they're jumping to the end. The other end are people who naturally systematize. If something's chaotic, they see the pattern, put it down so that it can be repeated and followed. Very different approaches. So much of the advice that we hear, though, is driven toward the second path.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the David Colby. He is the CEO and chief visionary of Colby Corp, which say that five times fast. If you do, he'll appear in your office space. David is transforming how the world understands human performance. He comes from a lineage of psychometric pioneers, which that's also a fun one to say five times fast, and is the CEO of Colby Corp. And they are the leader in helping people leverage their instinctive strengths to achieve what they care about most, which who doesn't love that? I do. We're about to get into it. David helped develop the original algorithm for the Colby A Index, the only proven tool to unlock cognitive strengths. And I hope I said that right. Otherwise, we're going to have my editor just totally fix it. It'll be like a TNT made for TV movie or something where they edit out all the swearing. Welcome to the show, David.
Kenny, great to be here. Thanks for having me. And yeah, looking forward to telling everybody about their cognitive strengths.
There you go. We're just going to say it over and over. It's like when you meet somebody and you're afraid you're going to forget their name. It's like, so David, how long have you done this? David, it's good to meet you, David. And then you sound like a weirdo and they run away, but you can't do that. Or I guess you could. You could just like end the call and delete the window. But David, tell me today, what is on your mind?
A lot. Things are a little crazy. So what's on my mind is helping people focus on the things that they can control, the things they can count on, which really starts from inside. People are worried about so much out in the world that is beyond their control. And we help people get back to, hey, what is it inside you that drives the way you take action and therefore drives your success?
I like that. Also, I made some jokes. I really do love the word choice in your bio about human performance and leverage instinctive strengths. I think that there's a lot of, and this is part of what my podcast is meant to rebel against, of the guruism of like, let me show you the one best way, yep. Right? Like you got to get up at 4 a.m., walk backwards 3 miles, listen to a podcast at 3x speed while writing in your gratitude journal. If you're going to be anything in this life, you seem to take a different approach as well. Can you talk about instinctive strengths? And is that what you're meaning when you're saying, hey, we're trying to do better at recognizing and controlling only the things that we can control?
Yeah. So first of all, I love the way you put it, going against the one size fits all guru or otherwise. But that's what we're conditioned to listen to, is that person that is so convincing because, look, they did it. This is the path that they took and they're successful. So that must be the path. There's not one path. And what we do, I think the foundation of what we do is to help people understand there's something inside you that drives the way you take action. So there's a lot of advice out there that's great advice for other people. And you need to learn to let it go. And it's hard because your friends start doing it and other people with success doing it that way. And so it's one of those easier said than done because it is very attractive. It's simple. It cuts to the chase, but it helps to just go a couple of steps deeper and figure out. So I would say the first step is just figure out, and this gets back to your question, the instinctive part. What we've seen is people are hardwired to have an instinctive way of taking action. And when they're able to follow those strengths, they can get more done and not get burn out so quickly. They can use less energy and then they can decide what to do with that energy that's kind of left over. They can have some downtime. They can turn it into other endeavors if they want, but that's up to them.
Gotcha. Yeah. It makes me think of, I've been doing some research on like growth versus scaling, and growth is like this continuous addition of more, which I'm not saying anything bad about growth. Growth is great. But scaling is almost like doing more with less, right? Like it may be leaning into those instincts and the hardwiring. Now we do that. We think I would say it's more easy or easier. There we go. Sorry, whoever my English teacher was just now, but it's easier for us to think about that in an organizational context, but we don't really think about scaling ourselves quite so much. Would you say that some of that is what is the prevailing wisdom or current thinking when it comes to really leaders leveraging their strengths? Is there's number one, like you said, there is this best set of strengths. Do I have them? Do I need to lean into them? Do I need to develop them? And then also I'm scaling my company, I'm scaling my nonprofit, I'm scaling my ministry, whatever it is, but they don't really think about how am I scaling myself?
Yeah. Fascinating question, growth versus scaling. I think from an individual level, yes, what we're talking about, the strengths we're talking about tapping into them are how you scale yourself. So let me give a little background of what the heck it is we're talking about. So this cognitive part of the mind, at a big picture level, there are really three fundamental parts of the human mind: thinking, feeling, and doing. So the thinking, the cognitive part, how smart you are, and your learned skills in there, all kinds of cognitive tests, IQ tests, SAT tests, spelling tests. I go down the line. If you're an accountant and you took a CPA test, it's another cognitive test. The affective feeling part is our preferences, our desires. They're all kinds of affective instruments. I know you use Enneagram and Working Genius is one, Myers-Briggs, DISC, Predictive Index. There are a bunch of really solid ones. You have to watch out. There are also a bunch of not very solid, but maybe fun ones you can find on the internet. Take that for fun if you want, but don't put too much stock in some of those other ones. But then there's this third part of the mind. It's not how we think or feel, but it's the way we take action. This concept goes back literally to the Greek philosophers, Plato, Aristotle, talking about the cognitive part of the mind, the way we take action. So it's not how we think or feel, but how we do. And what we've seen at Colby Corp is seems to be hardwired. It doesn't change over time. We've done test retest studies and it's very stable. And let me give you an example. So one of the things we look at four, what we call action modes. One of them is how we deal with gathering and sharing information. So I happen to be on one end of that spectrum where I ask a lot of questions. I get information. I really research, drive to become an expert. If you ask me a question, if I don't know the answer, I'd rather not guess. I'd rather go find it out and get back to you. Now, maybe I've already done the research and I can just say, oh, it's this. People on the other end of the spectrum, they don't need all that data and all that information. They really key on just the most important bits of information. And keep in mind, this is not how intelligent you are. So it's not like the person on the end where I am with all kinds of facts and figures. That doesn't make me smarter. You can be really dumb and have lots of facts and figures and you just can't make sense of them. Unfortunately, we know some of those people who like to spout facts and details and you're like, yeah, but you are really missing the point. Mm-hmm. But so that's just an example of when you tap into that, kind of lean into your strengths, you'll be more effective and more efficient. And that's, I think, the scaling. You'll be more efficient. You will use less energy because you're doing it the way that's natural for you.
And there's so many different ways I want to take this, but I do love the idea of the three different centers of intelligence that you're describing of thinking, feeling, and then doing. Doing is harder to see, maybe in my experience and understanding, but also maybe harder to understand. I heard a teacher, the Enneagram accounts for this and utilizes the three centers of intelligence. And I heard a teacher on these three centers talk about, like, we do have a dominant one, which is what I think you're getting into, is that you have all three, but one's going to be that more natural, that one that we lean into most often. And the doing folk, like, we take in the information with our body and can act before our brain has a chance to catch up. Now the brain eventually does. And in my case, my brain processes what my body's feeling. My feelings, I don't know where they are. I've been trying to find them. So if anybody could help me with that, maybe a therapist out there, I'll figure them out. But when I heard that, there was a feeling of being seen and a bit of a relief that came to me because I was like, oh, this way's okay. It's just less understood. With as many of thousands and thousands of people who take your test every year and the research y'all have done, are y'all finding that same thing of just the, oh, this way of being, of getting work done, of where I tend to lean initially is actually giving me permission to relax a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. We hear that over and over again when we work with clients. They'll get their Colby index results and go, oh my gosh. And that feeling of relief, that's a word that comes, a lightness, a freedom a lot of people talk about because, mm-hmm. you know, I talked about the three parts of mind. The first two are the ones that you've been taught about and they're really important. You go to school mm-hmm. and that's really mostly about your cognitive skills. What have you learned? Learn more stuff that you can use in your work life for the most part. Yeah. And we've all been taught about emotional intelligence and our feelings. And again, those are very important. This is not a we're better or more important, the cognitive piece. It's not right. that. It's just that nobody was talking to you when you were 12 years old about the cognitive piece and how important it is.
Right.
If anything, what we see is because people don't know about it so much, they don't tap into it. They're not really even aware it's there. They aren't aware of what it is. They are aware it's there, but they get this advice going back to where we started. They'll get advice, whether that's a mentor, a parent, a teacher, the audience, you guys read books, you listen to podcasts, and somebody says, listen to me, I'll tell you how to do something. And you get this advice and it steers you in the wrong direction because it doesn't tap into this part of the mind. So let me give you another example of from one of the other things we look at, how people deal with systems and structure, what we call the follow-through action mode. So on one end of the scale, I'll start at the other end, is somebody who is open-ended, adaptable, flexible. You give them a system, maybe they'll go through the system one time, but if they do it the second time, they are finding shortcuts. They're jumping to the end. Yes, this is you, Kenny. You and I.
Out.
Yeah, you and I are both at this end of this spectrum here. The other end are people who naturally systematize. They create processes. If something's chaotic, they see the pattern, put it down so that it can be repeated and followed. So very different approaches. So much of the advice that we hear, though, is driven toward the second half of that. It's so, Kenny, for you and me, the advice of finish what you start. Like, really?
Dude, I've been beating the head with that.
Right. Of course you have. And you know what? It's hard for you. And think back to when you're a kid, especially. It's hard for a kid who's like you and me to have the confidence to stand up because it sounds ridiculous. No, I'm going to start a bunch of stuff and I'm not going to finish it. Nobody thinks that's productive. But you know what? It is. It's productive for people like you and me. And that's about 20% of the population is out on one end of that side of the continuum. But because they aren't given that advice, they're always told the opposite from people that they respect and look up to and want to please. You work and work and work against the grain, beating your head up against the wall. And because we don't measure can and can't, you can do that and you do it and it's hard, but you get kudos. Oh, Kenny, great. Look what you did. Yeah, but it was so much harder than it needed to be. You should have been given permission to start a bunch of stuff, experiment, toss 3/4 of it aside, never finish it, and then focus in on the 1 out of 20 brilliant ideas that you had. Who cares about the other 19?
Yeah. Damn, dude, I wasn't expecting to have that reaction to that, but that's my childhood all over and continuing on. What's funny is, as I say funny, it's even come up in conversations with my older kids. If you've listened for anybody who's listened for a period of time knows I have 5 kids. I have a lot of children. My hair is graying rapidly, but with say like my oldest who's 15, which it's just such a blessing to live in a house with someone who knows everything. I don't even need ChatGPT. But that's been something that he's commented on with me is like, yeah, we've asked you to do this. And I like have a great idea for us to do something or something in the house or a way to do stuff. And they're like, yeah, but then give it a couple weeks, give it a couple days. We're not going to do this. Or you said we're going to do this and we're not following through. And I was like, like you get left with this feeling that you're just consistently getting people's hopes up and then letting them down. And that has been a very tough through line in my life.
So here's the thing. given what we know and that these things don't change over time, this part of the way you take action, that doesn't mean you can't deal with kind of the consequences of how it plays itself out in your life and avoid pitfalls that might arise. So what you're describing is, okay, you don't want your kids to feel let down. And kids are different than grown-ups. And if you say to a kid, oh, we could do this, they might take that as we are going to do this. Your job as a parent then shifts a little bit. It's not about you changing yourself so that every time you have an idea and you mention it, everything gets finished. But you can learn to change your language and say, listen, here's something that's a possibility, or here's another idea. And then you can shift to other people the next part of the process of, hey, I just came up with 7 things we could do this weekend. We don't have time for all 7, or we don't have money for all 7 or whatever, but what's the one thing that you'd like to do? And then when your kid knows, and you're smart enough to know, I can channel my efforts into the things that are my priority, the things that I care most about, and I'll finish those things. So I have 4 kids. You and I are very similar in both the follow through, which is that open-ended, not systematic, doesn't finish everything we start. Also, we're both initiating in quick start, which is how everyone deals with risk, the unknown, innovation. So both you and I experiment, take chances, do things differently. So I was going to get back to the kid and family stuff. My wife is an initiating follow through. So she creates the calendar. She has a plan. She has a system. She knows what's going to happen all the time. Well, with 4 kids, the kids mess that up. Now, before we had kids, I would mess that up because it was just me and her in that family dynamic. And she'd get more frustrated with me. Once we had kids, I was smart enough to realize I just have to outlast a 2-year-old in terms of not messing with the system. But then because I care about my wife, because I care about our family, when the system does break down, that's really when it's my responsibility, because now I actually have a strength that's better suited to that situation than she does. She's always looking for putting it in a plan and a system, a structure. Sometimes with kids, that doesn't work. Those times are when it's really my responsibility to step up and go, all right, there is no plan. I'm just going to invent something. And might be a total disaster, by the way. But as Kenny and a lot of the people listening know, sometimes those total disasters that are well-intentioned turn out to be the core memories that you talk about for the next 50 years with your kids. Yeah. It's not just the perfect things that go as planned. It's that, oh, do you remember we had that day we were going to do, we're going to go have that picnic, but then this and that. And if you find a way to laugh through it, it's probably better than the boring, mundane thing that was planned all along. Of course, that's what you and I would say, because that's what we create.
But I think those things happen in the business world too. And with some of the frameworks you and I know, like having that visionary second in command relationship too, is a bit like a business or organizational marriage, if you will. And you made mention of something that I'd be curious on what you're finding. And then I do want to make sure that we go over those 4 different modes and you give just a run through for some more context for listeners that maybe aren't familiar with Golby. But you mentioned systems, and I've leaned heavily into, especially technology, because I'm a nerd, but systems or technology to try to mitigate or cap the downside of that low follow through, which is the name of, if you're listening, that is one of the 4 modes. And that has been a help. Is that what you're seeing, not just for folks like you and I, but for others who are the look for systems to help balance the scales, no matter what side of those 4 modes they're on?
Yeah, in all of the 4, and let me just finish all 4 now, because we've already talked about 3 of them. Fact finder is the gathering and sharing information. Follow through is the systems and structure. Quick start, I only briefly covered, that's the risk innovation. So I talked about the one side where you and I are, that is kind of always experimenting, brainstorming, going. It's not an energy level. Sometimes people mix that up. You do see that sometimes, but it's more, you can be a kind of laid back, mellow, initiating quick start. It's just you're always coming up with ideas, experimenting, taking chances.
Yeah.
The other end of that spectrum is somebody who stabilizes, who sees what's been working and sticks with that. So they really they key in on the tried and true rather than always experimenting and doing something differently. The last of the four is what we call implementer, and it's how we relate to the three-dimensional world. So the name is a little confusing. It's not how we implement as in carry things out. That's more the follow through. It actually comes from this notion of using tools and implements. So on the one end of the scale is somebody who really physically builds and constructs. That's the way they take action. If you ask them a question, if they're free to be themselves, they will show you physically the answer. They will maybe literally build it, but they take action in three dimensions. I keep doing this for them because with their hands, yeah, they are. The other end of the spectrum is kind of the opposite of that. It's somebody who creates and does things with their imagination. So it's less tactile and more virtual in that sense. So those are those four action modes. In each of those four, we have a scale, and we like to de-emphasize the numbers, but they're there because people like them. The scale is 1 to 10, but the thing is, 1 isn't better, 10 isn't better. It's just where you are on the continuum that I was talking about. So in quick start, a 10 in quick start means that's really how you initiate action with that experimenting, brainstorming kind of stuff. 1, the other end of the scale, is somebody who really stabilizes. So 1 to 10 is in all of them, but the key thing to remember is there's no better or worse. It's just, where are you on that scale?
Gotcha. Yeah. And there's a lot, as I was going through the report, there were some things I was learning that I had not previously known, because like I was telling you before we hit record, I've been aware of the Kolbe A index for several years now. I've heard about it. I've had friends who've taken it. I swear I hallucinated and I was reading about it. I dreamed that I took it, but I had known about the numbers. I knew about the categories and kind of like what that meant. But then seeing like the different segments and some of the breakdowns and question, are you tired of these questions? I was like, sweet Jesus. Yes, I am. There's a lot of depth to it. So if you're already thinking about it, like, you can come finish this episode, but then go take the Kolbe A assessment. But I was asking about the systems for compensation. Is that something that y'all are from clients and participants?
Yeah. And we recommend it for people like you and me who are at that. You were talking about systems. Technology is a great way to get around it. You don't have to create your own systems. There are all kinds of companies that are doing it for you. It's so much easier than it used to be. If you just think about keeping a calendar and sharing it with people, like you used to be able to keep it pencil and paper. You had to carry your organizer with you 24/7. People who are old enough remember those physical things that they carried around, but sharing it was sure a pain in the neck. And now all that's easier. You don't have to create those systems. And same thing with reminders. You and I are the kind of people where, oh, we'd put it in our calendar. That doesn't mean we'd show up. But now you carry your phone with you, and it's not just on the calendar, but it pings you 15 minutes beforehand. And you're like, oh yeah, I better get to my office and sit down and turn the Zoom on. Yeah. So those things are great. There are lots of ways to deal with, but let me get, so that the technology is amazing, but I think most importantly is understanding other people in the world are different than you. So we all have our own strengths. Mm. Mm-hmm. Number one is understand our strengths. Know thyself. Again, ancient wisdom. But the other part is work with other people. You are not an island unto yourself. Yes, you need to know who you are and how you operate best. But you will do more good in the world when you connect and collaborate with other people, and not just the ones who are just like you. So this could go in a very philosophical direction. I'll stick with Kolbe and the conative part of you. But here's what we see over and over again. When you have teams of people that all look alike, conatively speaking, they're not very effective teams. So let's just take one of the action modes. Let's take fact finder. So this is the gathering and sharing information. If you have a room full of people like me that ask questions, get information, dig deeper, more detail, If you think math, it's like go out to another decimal point of precision and another and analyze risks. And I've already gone on so long. That's what happens. That team, that group of people focuses on all that stuff and they don't really get much done. They get a lot of research and information gathering, but they don't get done what they were assigned to do, the task. And the problem is because they're all alike, they often don't realize it, or they realize it, but they don't know how to get out of that cycle because it's so natural to all those people.
Gotcha.
When you insert one or preferably two people, depending on how big the group is, but it just when you insert people who are different, who have the opposite instinctive take on it, they will naturally raise their hand or butt in and say, hey guys, yeah, I know enough. We got enough information. We just need to move forward now. And if we make a mistake, we'll learn from it, get more information, but
right,
let's push out of that.
Right. Cause that every strength has that sort of two-edged sword. I don't know what the right word is. It just left my brain. I need more Dr. Pepper. But basically any strength, if overused or not connected to other strengths,
yeah.
Was it? I heard someone say is that a well-rounded teams will beat well-rounded leaders any day of the week. That's what I feel like I hear you saying is if we understand how we can build these components in to leverage these instinctive strengths, these natural tendencies of doing things. And one thing that is curious to me is a lot of assessments are focused on the other parts of you, right? Like the feelings, like EQ assessments, those are great. Those are good. Some are personality. I would put them in more like a personality typology or a bucket, which could get really gray and murky. And some are, like you said, the IQ. The why action for you, other than maybe it wasn't studied as much? And how should people be blending the insight from, say, an assessment like Colby with these others? Because kind of like we were talking about is that all of these different profiles and assessments and tools that we could nerd out about, they all sort of show shape and size and color and shading of a human. I don't think that there's one assessment to rule them all.
Totally agree.
Why action? Why understand the bias towards action and doing?
The first and most straightforward answer to your question is you already answered it. It was because nobody else had really done it. So a little bit of the history. My mom, Kathy Colby, is the one who actually developed the test. As your intro said, I helped come up with the scoring algorithm, but she really figured out what the heck is this thing I've tapped into and I'm trying to measure and assess. And a little further back in the history, some of your listeners and watchers, viewers may know the Wunderlich personnel test. You're looking like maybe you've heard of that.
I've heard of it, but it's not coming to mind, but I feel like I've heard that spoken about.
Yeah, it's a short form intelligence test, basically, that was developed by my grandfather, Eldon Wunderlich. Most people who hear of it these days, it's because the NFL Draft Combine used it for years and years. So that's where it's gotten publicity. But so that's on the cognitive side. So my grandfather had developed that. And my mom would talk to him and say, yeah, but we all know smart people. And then you add in the affective and like kind of well-meaning, good values and committed people. They're smart. They're committed, values alignment. And yet there's something missing sometimes. Or gosh, they were great at one job and now they got promoted and now they're not so good. And it's not because they aren't smart, because they're still smart. So the Peter principle of, you promote somebody beyond their competence. Sometimes that's true, that now they just aren't smart enough. But they're people who, they're plenty smart. But what changed was the demands that their job placed on them in terms of the way they take action. So that's what my mom was looking at is, what's this other part of the mind? And she did the research and figured out, I'm not the first person to identify that there is this part of the human mind, but she really was the first person to come up with an assessment to measure and isolate it.
Gotcha. A bit like you mentioned the Peter principle, the easiest one for me, and maybe it's just because of my background in sales, is that top sales leader gets promoted to sales manager.
Yep.
And suddenly you don't end up with a team full of top sales leaders.
Right.
And is that kind of speak into the research your mom and others now, yourself included, are continuing to study. Because even when I took the assessment, there were some questions at the end. I was like, oh, dear God, they're still studying this, which is great. I love that. Reliability and validity, right? We got to have it. But it wasn't that person needed to understand sales any more or less or really differently or how they felt about the company or felt about the clients.
Yep.
It was the things they were being asked to do were substantively different as a manager as opposed to an individual, a high performing individual contributor.
Yeah. Yeah. The stereotype with that job would be, oh, you take somebody who is a risk taking, deal making closer, and you turn them into somebody who's all about process and systems and data and keeping track of it, being on top of it, and then riding herd on other people. Those are different. It's a different way of taking action. Again, it's not that they aren't smart enough. They know the sales process. They know the products. Mm-hmm. They understand people, but it's just not the sweet spot for them. But I also want to get back. You asked, and I didn't really answer this part, basically how you blend these three. Part of your preface to it was you don't believe there's one assessment. And I totally agree. There's not one assessment that is just, this is what you need to know about human beings. So if you take these three parts of the mind, and keep in mind that even leaves out a lot of stuff, spirituality that is probably outside of those three parts of the mind, maybe touches on the affect because it is connected to values. But also it leaves out the physical part of our bodies, our strength and coordination and those kinds of things. But just the three parts of the mind, you do need to blend all of them together. So I think at a top level way to think about it is, let me apply it to if I'm thinking about what career should I embark on? You need to have an understanding of what you're smart in. If you just aren't good at math, maybe engineering is not the right place to go. If you have great language skills, but not great math skills, then, you know, maybe be a lawyer or a writer or a communications person with that. So that's the cognitive side. Then there's also the affect of what are your values? What are your interests? If you are really fascinated by something, like maybe that's a direction to go also, because it's your work is going to be more interesting to you. You'll be able to stick with it more. And little side note, I'm not a huge follow your passion person. I think that's way overdone. I'm not saying, but I say, don't ignore your passion, go towards it. Mm-hmm. But since I already started with the cognitive piece, if you just go towards your passion and you ignore the fact that cognitively you're not very good at it, that's not a good fit either. So those two need to fit together. But then the last part, the way you take action. So most careers are broad enough that there are different ways to attack it. So I'm actually a lawyer. I haven't been practicing for a long time, but there are different ways to be a successful lawyer. It's not just the stereotype of someone who asks lots of questions, gathers and shares information. Some of them are lower on that end of on the fact finder, and they have other strengths, and that's fine. But anyway, you put all those three together to find what works for you in a way that works for you. And I think that last part for us is the key.
I really like that. It makes me think of, are we even talking about leadership if we don't talk about a Venn diagram or a 2x2 matrix? But really, like that intersection of those three, because if you only have two out of the three, like something, you're going to miss a piece and it just won't align. The other thing, I love what you said, you know, that don't ignore your passion, but don't put it in the driver's seat. I would tell people, like, you need to hold that with sort of an open hand as opposed to a closed hand, because what I thought I would end up doing is not what I'm doing today. Yeah. But all of the things, as I look back, would indicate this would have been a great outcome to pursue, but I needed to bounce to some different things and figure stuff out to where I could find that harmony between those three. And I think also my results give scientific proof that I'm probably unemployable. So I like how you're talking about blending this. The thought that comes to mind, and in part because of the work I do in helping clients build org charts and descriptions and understand outcomes. And we talked about, I've done some work with six types of working genius with some clients, trying to figure out, like, who do we promote and who do we hire for this? And where do we go here? it would seem to me, going back to, say, our sales leader manager example, that person just should probably never be made manager, because it would put them in a position to have to act in a way that was, that would drain them far too quickly. It would not feel effortless and efficient, as you mentioned before. But everybody, and maybe this is just a Western thought or maybe a US thought of like, well, I got to climb. I got to, what's the next promotion? What's the next level? What's the next layer? Like, I got to get into that.
Yep.
But it would seem what you're saying flies in the face of some of that. And I don't know if there's an easy answer. I think good answers rarely are easy. What if I'm just meant to be the world's mostest, greatest salesperson ever and never manage, even though that would on a resume seem more prestigious?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting with that, again, as the example, salesperson, those people who work in especially larger companies know who makes more money. The best salesperson makes a lot more money than the best sales manager at almost every mm-hmm. organization. So with that example, even though you're right, if you look at an org chart, oh, this person, the sales manager is the boss of those salespeople, mm-hmm. but they don't make as much money. So there's less pressure in that role. But we see it, you're right, we see it over and over again. This notion that you, maybe to tap into what you were talking about before, oh, well, I have to grow in my career, and that always means mm-hmm. a step up a ladder. I don't think that the ladder is the best way to think of it. The best way to think of it is, how can I kind of be most fulfilled, add most to the world or this company? What's the role where I get to do that? And since we're talking to people more in this podcast than we're talking to organizations, it's our jobs as ourselves to figure out with our lives. And our lives are so much more broad than just our 9-to-5 work life, or if you're an entrepreneur, your 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. work life. But
5 to 9.
Yeah. It's more than that. So you've got to figure out, what do I want with all of that time and with all the things that I can do? And how do I do the most with that? So I've written a book with Amy Brewski, who's the president of the company and co-author, and we collaborate on lots of things, called Do More, More Naturally. And it's all about figuring out, and what we're trying to help people understand by tapping into these instinctive strengths, you can get more accomplished using sometimes even less energy than before, because you're doing it in the way that's natural. You're getting into that flow state.
Right.
And then when you do it that way, you end up with more energy. You know, as I said, if you use less, you've got energy left over. Even if you're accomplishing the same thing, let's just say at work, you're accomplishing the same amount, but you're doing it more efficiently. So you've got more energy left to do other things in your life. Now, you can plow that, again, if you're an entrepreneur, sometimes that means I'm plowing that back into my startup phase business. Mm-hmm. If that's not your role, then you can, you know, channel it into your faith community, into your family, into all kinds of different things.
That's really good. We certainly will link up to the book in the show notes. So if anybody's interested in purchasing that, which I recommend it, I know I'm going to add that to the book. Although my wife will probably give me a severe eye roll when she sees that I've bought yet another book. And I'm like, no, it's cool. I could do it on Audible and then she doesn't see it.
I did the Audible version. So you'll have to listen to me if you do Audible.
I'm all right with that. I would just, you mentioned you're a lawyer. It made me think, I'd tell people I've watched all 9 seasons of Suits, so I'm pretty much a lawyer.
Oh, don't even get me started.
I'm going to add that on a little Kenny Lang Esquire.
Okay. I can't help myself.
Do it.
So I watched lots of Suits. I don't know that I've seen all of it. It's entertaining. I get it, but it drives me nuts so often. Like the entertainment for a lot of lawyers, and I've talked to other lawyer friends, you can't get past how outlandish some of the legal things are that they just pass off as like, this appears to be how legal stuff goes. Like, no, it really doesn't go that way. But it's all
like
right.
Doctors watching Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Although one of my favorite shows, Scrubs, I have been told is probably one of the medically and environmentally most accurate. My brother-in-law is an ER physician. He actually got one of the actors on that spoke at his, did like a short video for their class graduation
That's fun.
I was just going at the time. But yeah, so that's fun, but I'll pull that back.
No, it's okay.
I don't want to be held in contempt of Colby. How about that? So there's probably a lot more I want to dive into this and maybe even just selfishly get more insights into my own results. But in thinking through this, somebody's probably has a lot of questions, but I think you've given them a lot of questions to sit with, because I think it's deceptively simple what you just laid out in terms of you've got to get honest. And I would say internally get aligned, right? Like your brain, your cognition, the affective and the conative. I'm going to say it right, not stumble over it, but it's really getting those three aligned for yourself and then saying, given this, what do I want to do in the world? And defining what you want and then finding jobs or companies and opportunities and things that are aligned for you. By way of example, as you were saying that, it clarified something for me, which is towards the end of last year, business was growing, I was getting busier. And obviously with that lower follow through, I've used and leveraged tech as much as possibly can. And then there's always room for improvement and new advances. But I invested in a part-time executive assistant. Some of that had to do with the fact that like my wife was having brain surgery and there was a bunch of other stuff. And I was like, I'm going to be covered up. I'm already terrible at following through on things I said I was going to do. I was like, I need a little extra help. But I didn't realize until she said this, and then I experienced working with her for a couple months. She said, look, there's things that would take you hours that would probably take me minutes.
Yep.
And part of me wanted to like, hey, now, what are you saying? Like, I'm pretty awesome. I don't know if you know this. But then she did. She started getting on stuff. And then I was like, oh, not only did I feel like I had more time to sit with some of the projects and stuff flying at me, things that only I could do, which is a common line that's heard in leadership and organization building. But what I didn't count on was the mental, emotional lightness or capacity to happen. I was just looking at the connotative, just the sheer number of things to get done before I crash and burn at the end of the day that she would take off of me. I actually felt a little lighter, a little happier. And then now I'm turning and going, actually this year I wanted to be able to have more capacity, both time and emotional, mental for my kids. I've got two that are about to be in high school. I got two in middle school and I got a 3-year-old. Like, especially with those older ones, I'm like, look, my time's running out. I only have a few more years and I you know, don't want their best memory to be dad shutting the office door. Right. So you've really put a lot of language to that experience of, I started offloading some of the things that really drained me that I was doing, but they also drained the affective and cognitive side of me. And now feeling that coming back, I'm like, I hope she doesn't listen to this, but she could probably charge me like 3x. And I would still go, that's been worth it for the level of freedom and energy I have felt towards new work of creating and writing and compiling and doing some of those things. So you've really given me some helpful language, and I hope and would be willing to bet you've given some other listeners language for that. If someone is listening and says, yeah, that this is great, I love this idea, this concept, you've really like, you've poked on something that I haven't been able to figure out, what's something that they could do in the next 24 hours, little to no money, to take that first baby step towards understanding their instinctive strengths and being able to do more naturally?
Sure. So I'll give three things quickly. One, we mentioned the book. You know, especially the digital versions are not expensive. So you can do that, whether it's Audible or on a Kindle. You can take your Colby A index. That is $55 on Colby.com, K-O-L-B-E.com. But for no money, what I would really encourage people to do is just to get in a quiet place and to think back those times when I've really felt like in that flow state, getting things done. You talked about energy and you talked about before you had the executive assistant and you would be burnt out, you would just work and you'd crash at the end of the day. But there are those times when you're doing something and you have the freedom to do it your own way where you can keep going. You know, it gets to 8 o'clock at night and you frankly don't want to stop and you have the energy to keep going.
Yeah.
When you're in those times and you can think back in the past when you've had that freedom to work like that, what has it felt like? Mm-hmm. What have you been doing? What's the natural way that you do things? So even if you don't take your Colby Index or read the book, you can get to a lot of what we've been talking about and have a closer sense of who you are. And then you get that and you understand that, do more of that. That's the bottom line to it, is whatever that thing is and however you figure it out for yourself, then do more of that and less of all the other stuff. And I'd really also encourage people, your story about the executive assistant, it's not always somebody you pay, but there are people out there who love doing and are great at doing the things that you don't do well. And yeah, they'll do in minutes what takes you hours. And you're not punishing them by having them do it. You're actually giving them the freedom to use their God-given abilities.
Absolutely. That's great. And those are some amazing options. So go get the book, take the assessment, or just get a loan or go to a coffee shop, something, and get honest with yourself about those questions. David, if people want to know more about you, about your work or anything else, what's the best way to connect with you, find you, and stay up to date?
Go to the company website, colby.com. You can find us there. My email is dcolby@colby.com if people want to get in touch with me that way.
Excellent. And we have LinkedIn and some of the other social accounts where I'm sure you've got a great team putting out content that they can get little nuggets of insights and reshare it and feel like, oh gosh, man, I'm now the smartest of all my friends. That's why I like resharing stuff. It makes me look smarter. David, thank you so much for your time. I would love to have you back in the future, and maybe we'll dive in deeper to some of these topics, because I think that there's a lot more here to be understood and to glean from. For all of you listeners, thank you so much for spending a little bit of your time today with me and David. We could have had a great time even if we never recorded this, and we probably would have gotten into a lot of fun, probably a little bit of trouble. But since you listened in, please like, rate, review, subscribe if this helped you. There are others just like you who are looking for these sort of conversations and content. And when you give that little bit of engagement that costs you nothing, it may mean the world to somebody who could stumble upon this and help them on their leadership journey. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead.